the rare bills of the person, looking, like spending, like in other words, I spend time with the person, you know, like I have to become I have to absorb myself into that person, and then go back and sit down with the team and say, this is the type of care that they need, this is the environment that they should be in, this is what, you know, we have to do for them.
Yeah.
And so I make a package for them. I do packages. So
what would the packages include? Like their meals or... I mean, because a person who's about to die, what kind of things do they need in this planning package? And what? And how soon do you say... I mean, some people may be dying in like 5 years.
Right.
Some people might be dying in 3 weeks, right? So.
And some people may be dying and you don't know.
Oh, yeah, like you are dying right now.
Right. But no, what I'm saying is like you don't see... Let's say somebody has cancer inside them. You don't know that this cancer is inside them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you cut them open,
mm-hmm.
it's going to spread.
Ah.
I have that. So what
you
I have
cancer
to,
or
no patients.
Oh, you have patients.
So what I have to do is I know the person's ill.
Uh-huh.
I know the person has cancer. I have to go in and look at that environment and say, this person, I've been with this person for a long time. This upsets them. They get agitated. This and this and that. They breathe heavy. It's warm in here. Now I have to tell them, you have to change this whole environment.
So like interior design changes.
Interior design, you know, the food that they eat, what kind of outings you're going to take them on. Like for example, sometimes I left that, but because you become so absorbed in it, it becomes like you become the like them.
Mm-hmm.
Before I left, I had a liver transplant. Now that's a life and death situation right there, because mm-hmm. the patient is on the list, doesn't know when he's going to get this liver, if he's ever going to get called, right?
No.
They never know.
Yeah, so they could be, how do you design that package?
Well, I had to become very sensitive to that person. It's like I was walking with that person.
Mm.
Through there, they were 47, they looked 89.
Oh, wow.
That was life.
Did they die?
No, they didn't. They got it.
They got the liver?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they call them just like that. Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but in the meantime, it was years before they got it. So their quality of life had to be so meaningful
mm-hmm.
because I never knew the next day if they were going to wake up.
So you also design...
Their activities.
To say, if you are only going to live for another week, what do you want to do in that week? So
right.
you take them to, say, Disneyland or
right.
Coney
yes.
Island or
some of them
strip
never,
clubs or that kind of thing.
Some
poorhouses
yeah.
or anything like that.
Yeah, wow. some of them don't even know how, some of them can't speak. Don't forget, some of them had a brain injury where they can't speak. So I have to look at their life and say, okay, this person before this accident happened, okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I have to now want to go back in and redesign that quality of life on that scale of where they are now.
And what did you call your position? You said that you planned, you were a package designer for people with terminal illnesses. Is there a particular occupational title? Or?
No, it's just that I have years and years and years and years of medical training and also educational training, and you know, and basically my innate skills.
Mm.
A lot of that, like when I was in education, my boss was from China. You see, because I'm very much absorbed in people.
Mm-hmm.
He told me, Teresa, I want you to go in there and work with this population. I said, I don't know Chinese people. He said, but I see you reading books like this. You're studying Chinese history. I said, yes, it's my personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Russian history, I love history. He said, but I know you can do this. He said, I want you to go in there and you're going to take these, they were refugees. And you're going to build a life for them. I said, oh my God, that was my first encounter.
And you said your boss told you this?
My boss was from China.
And what... What?
Oh, I was working in education.
Like as a high school? Or?
Yeah, high school.
Oh, wow.
I was working with the principal of the high school, and they were bringing in refugees. Asian from Canton, different parts. And I didn't know they were doing this, but I was, you know, fascinated by Chinese culture. And so he used to watch me. You never know who's watching you. I used to have all these books and studying them. And so one day he pulled me in and he said, you know, we're creating a program that I think you'd be very well. And I said, well, what is that? He said, I said, don't put me in this class. He said, no. He said, I'm going to put you with 25 Asian people, refugees that's coming in. They're, you know, and you're gonna bring them into society. You're going to Americanize them, but not to get them to lose their culture. And let me tell you something, it was phenomenal. I mean, because I felt I had studied the history of Asian people so much that I used to, and this was before we had a job. I used to collect antique Asian gowns. Uh-huh. So I was into it. And the people felt that. They embraced me. And I mean, when I was saying that I'm leaving, you know, that job, the 25 people, the parents, they came to me. I mean, they gave me beautiful jade and porcelain. And I said, no, this is my job. They took me down into Chinatown with streets that people would not know. And when you walk into the little, look like a little rat hole, it's a fabulous, fabulous world in there. Now, I thought I had went back centuries, and they said to me that your heart was so real that you really, you know, helped us to absorb the American lifestyle. And they said, you know, we want to say thank you to you. And they gave me a authentic Chinese banquet, and I was just like loving the people. Loving the culture. And so from there, you know, my boss told me, I told you, you know, you have that gift. So I took it. I went to the Middle East. I did the same thing over there. I went to Saudi Arabia and I worked with the Iranian people. And this is not something that I go say I'm going to do. It's something that I fall into. It's like I'm drawn to the people because the people feel you. And, you know, I help them. You want to come to America or whatever, whatever they want, you have to be able to transform and see it happening. So now what I do is I'm living my dream. I'm, you know, I'm writing, I'm doing whatever, you know, comes naturally, and hopefully I'll be able to go out and speak about this. You see how I just spoke with you about it?
Yeah, I'm very interested in it. Yeah. Would you be interested in being interviewed for what, tell your story and sort of give your insight? I could see you're very insightful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I would love it. Are you serious?
Yeah. You know, I mean, set up a camera and let you talk and ask some questions and kind of unpack the some of your background, because I think it's a very particular biographical note that isn't seen very frequently, you know? So
right.
How would you feel? Would you like that?
Oh, I would love that, because I'm trying to get... What I'm really trying to do is to tell people, this is about my life,
mm-hmm.
that how I came to be who I am today. I mean, really, you know, I mean, because of my suffering, I'm being honest with you.
What is the suffering? What suffering are you?
You know, like. When I say suffering, like my loss, like what I wasn't able to bring forth in my life, because I had a daughter who was born with disabilities, and in that time, it was told to me to put her in an institution, and I felt that nobody should just be cast away like that, and so. It was a choice. You either go forth and live your dream, or you bring her forth so that she can at least have a chance to live. I mean, really. So my quest was to find how I could make this person, this baby, who was born with developmental disabilities, you know, who was looked upon as being unfit in this society to thrive and nurture. My quest was to prove to them that they were wrong. And so I spent 25 years, you know, going out advocating for her to get into schools, to live in the right communities, to be around the people so she could absorb that strength to thrive. But it meant my life was put on hold. Mm-hmm. So when my journey of what I encountered shaped who I am today.
And was it because of your daughter that you went to China?
No, I didn't go to China.
Oh, you didn't go? Oh, I'm sorry, that was here.
That was here, okay. I did it here.
And so you worked with people from Saudi Arabia, it was all within
New
York.
I went to Saudi Arabia, I went. Uh-huh. Yeah, my husband was an oil engineer, and I lived in London, and, you know, I worked with Indians who were coming in, like again, like refugees. Mm-hmm. But what happened was that the Arab, the Iranian woman, they embraced me. And, you know, here I was, you know, a woman there by myself, no friends, trying to decide, you know, do I come back to America and go through this whole struggle again of, you know, being honest of racism. Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, you know, I was thinking, and I said, oh, God, I don't want to come back. But then I noticed that these women, that we had a bond, but it wasn't through words. It was through, you know, being a woman. And I think that they felt me. They felt me because they used to touch me. And I used to say, well, I know that we don't touch. You know, because we was, you know, in the mosque. I absorbed that. Whatever your circumstances did, you got to go into that world. And so I went into Islam, you know, because at the time, here I was an alien in a place. And so I said, you know, do I live or do I crumble? So I went in and I said, you know, I got to live. So I did it. And I didn't speak the language. But I noticed that when I came in, it was because of my humbleness. It was because of my vulnerability that they would look at me and, you know, come around me and just touch me. Mm. And that touching was saying, we feel you, you know, we know your pain, but we're not here to hurt you. You know, so come and join us. And it was rewarding. And so what I'm trying to say is all these experiences that for me came out of trying to find myself out of feeling, you know, I lost so much. How do I ever, you know, leave this earth, this world, and feeling fulfilled? So my way of feeling fulfilled, I noticed, was that I was a nurturer. You know, I nurtured, and people sensed that about me, and so they wanted to be around me. And I have had some, I'm telling you, some phenomenal experience. I know, but I have. And now that I'm mature, I'm beginning to appreciate it, and appreciate when people come up to me and tell me, you live an extraordinary life. And I say, extraordinary. Every day it was a struggle. But they say, you should be out there telling this, sharing this with the world, because so many people are suffering. And I said, well, I don't know how to get started. And, you know, I got so to the point where I was frustrated. This is when I left my job, because I, you know how you hear something so much and you keep saying, maybe I'm not doing what I should be doing. And then one day, well, I'm a Buddhist, so I was chanting, and, you know, I said, why is it that I've helped so many people and I can't help myself? What is wrong with me? What am I not seeing about myself? And it's saying that, you know, and I was just chanting and chanting, and it hit me, boom. They're saying that you don't see that you are the teacher, that you are supposed to just go in and give it and leave. You know, like in other words, I'm not supposed to be like, you know, sitting at a desk and just doing. It says, you know, you are the messenger. Because I do talk. I mean, you can see I can talk now. But I had to learn, because I always thought that you had to be at a big desk and you had to be so glamorous. No, it's not. It's that your mission is to change people's lives for the better. And so I finally got it. I said, I got it. So when I used to go to restaurants and sit down, I'm telling you this is the truth. And I would see a person, something would say to me, talk to this person. And I would just start talking to them. And if I make this up, I would never lie to you because I don't know you. This girl was sitting there with her boyfriend at the counter. We was at Smokes on 27th Street. And I was talking to her. And she started crying. And I said, oh, miss, please. I said, don't cry. I said, you know, I'm sorry if I offended you. But her boyfriend was trying to get their table. And she said, no, you didn't offend me. She said, I've been struggling with something. And she said, you just walk right in. And your conversation, what you're telling me is what I've been seeking. I said, really? She said, yeah. She said, do you have a car? She said, do you give lecture places? She said, would you please, you know, I said, Miss, no. I said, I just felt that I needed to talk to you. And let me tell you, her boyfriend turned around and saw her crying like that. And she said, you know, something. And she said, no. She said, no. She helped me. She gave me a breakthrough. Paid for her dinner and drinks. And then I looked, and he did it. And I said to myself, she was struggling with the fact of this was a decent guy. She was seeing two guys. And one of the guys was, you know, maybe a hip, you know, cool guy, but it wasn't for her. He was a guy that really loved her. And she was right at the crossroad of struggling with, should I be in this relationship with him? You know, he's good to me, but I don't know because I like Bill. I'm just making this up. And I come in and boom, I'm telling her it's Bill, but not knowing that this is what she's struggling with. Until she turned around the guy took the table ready, she turned around and she said, you changed the course of my life. And I said, really? She said, you helped me to see the decision that I needed to make. This is the one. I said, wow. That was like, wow. That blew me away. I mean, really, it blew me. That happened in that restaurant. And I just went there to have, you know, ribs. So your question is, it comes from my journey. It comes from my spirit. It's like I was born to do this. And I didn't know how. And I just, you know, do it. Like, I believe, this is true. I just left my Buddhist temple. Mm-hmm. And I stopped and I said, which way am I supposed to go today? What is going to happen to me today that I need to be on a certain block? And I said, let it go. And it's going to happen. And look, I walked into here. Didn't it happen?
You
saw me move. Mm-hmm. You saw me move past you. And then you saw me come back. And then I walked in. That's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of thing that happened to me. I'm not afraid anymore. You know, I'm. You know, when I left my job, I realized that there's your job is bigger and wider. You just got to get out there and trust the universe. And so I'm trusting it. I'm trusting it. So I said goodbye to my job. It was hard. And, you know, I'm doing what I got to do. But I have never in my life felt so rewarded. It's not like I'm putting on any airs. You know, I don't have to, you know, stand here and do this. And this is coming from me. This is my soul is finally fulfilled. You know, my spirit's finally said, yes, you got it. Did you go see Savage Beauty? Okay. Everybody is talking about Alexander McQueen, that, you know, what a tragedy that he died, that he committed suicide. And so I went to the exhibit, my art group said this, but I didn't get that. When I didn't even know what it was about, but I liked museums, so I walked in. As soon as I walked in, I said, oops, this is darkness. This is S&M. I knew it. I felt it. Okay. So I walked in, and everybody was around, like they were glorifying this. And I said, I want to see what his journey was. I want to see why he took his life. This is what I wanted to see. Everybody went to see the clothes. I wanted to see the answer of. Oh, I wanted the answer at the end of the road. So I looked at all his work and who put it together, and he told me a story about light and dark. And I said, okay, so, you know, he's feeding a fantasy of people that can afford to pay him a lot of money, because that world of darkness and what he was, you know, showing, that one exhibit. I'm not talking about his strength badge. But he was telling a story that there's a darker world out here that is so wealthy. This is what I saw. That is so wealthy that these people are bored to the point of they'll do anything for, you know, an excitement. And so he says, I'm going to feed you this excitement. This is what I saw. I'm going to feed you this excitement. Because this is what you want. And maybe he was even into that world. Because that's a world of power and money. That world. I'm not talking about the sleazy ones. I'm talking about the world that where you see politicians in them. That's a world of power and money. And so when he took me through, I was saying, okay, I see what you're talking about. And then he did a part where it's... something rape, where Scotland about